Okay, so we left off. We're still towards the end of the Hashmonaim dynasty. Okay, the Hashmonaim dynasty started, I guess, with Matasyahu. We all know Matasyahu had five sons. At the time of the miracle of Hanukkah, all five sons were still alive. Shortly after the miracle of Hanukkah, all five sons would be dead within a few years. Within 5 years, they all died. Two died in war. Two died from treachery. Actually, the other three died from treachery. But the last one, Shimon, at least became like the leader. He had during his time, Judea was established, and he would have been called a king except for the sensitivities for the Sanhedrin, and realizing that only a king can come from Judah. And so he didn't take his, he was called the Nasi, or Chaver HaYehudim. His son, when he was killed, his son took over. And then following his son Antigonus, and when his son, his son took over, following Yochanan Hyrcanus took over, and then when Yochanan Hyrcanus passed away, it was a short time, then Yehuda Aristobulus, and when Yehuda Aristobulus died, then came Yanai. Yanai was a grandson of Shimon, who was one of the five sons of Matasyahu. What he became, how the wheel turns, he became, at the end of his life, he became, if not a tzaduki, left the camp of the Perushim, left the camp of the rabbis. At that time, most of the Jews were in the camp of the Perushim, most of the Jews were from. But the elite, secular group, so to speak, or Hellenized or Greek, Hellenized was a bad word, since the Greeks were defeated, you didn't use the word Hellenized, but they were Tzedukim. And Yanai HaMelech just found sympathy, or found he was a patron of the Tzedukim. And basically, there was actual civil wars with Yanai. He no longer had the support of the people, of the Jewish people at least. And basically, he dies. You could go to the next the slide. And basically, Yanai dies. He spends all his life, much of his career, just attacking, and on the battlefield. That's the type of a person he was. He wasn't recognized among the Jewish people. But he just kept trying to build his empire and build his empire. And he was, the place where he died, he died besieging a town called Regev in Transjordan. He was, and that's it, he died in a tent all alone. When he died, his wife Shalamis didn't tell anybody, not at first, because I guess she knew it's bad morale. Morale for the army when your king just died. By the way, he did use the title king. That came by Yanai HaMelech. He's called. He was known as a king. That sensitivity of not being from the house of Judah, from Yehuda, that didn't bother him as much. And he died. His wife Shulamis finished up the war, and she became the next queen of Judea. She became the next queen, and the Gemara brings down. This is, I think, what we ended with last time. The Gemara brings down that queen. She was afraid of Yanai, that Yanai would have a run-in with all the Perushim, basically the Jews. And the fear was, is look what you did to the Jewish people. He basically alienated them and surrounded himself with Sadukim and mercenaries. Most of his armies were mercenaries. And he was afraid that the Perushim would get even with them, because the Yanai HaMelech, when there was a revolt from the Jewish people against Yanai, And Yanai HaMelech actually killed like about 85 people cruelly. And he took their wives and killed them. And before, while he was torturing them, he killed their families in front of them and killed them. And basically after that, somehow at some point, it became a sobering effect on Yanai. And Yanai said that, you know, he actually sent to the Perushim. He says, okay, let's call a truce. Let's call peace. What do I got to do to get back in your favor? And they said, the only thing you could do is die, basically. That's what they said back to Yanai. And so that's it. Your death will be the... So Yanai dies in the tent, and Shalamis says to Yanai, like towards the end, I guess he was sick, he says, look, make peace, make peace. And there's a famous Gemara that's brought down where Yanai said to his wife, you don't have to worry about the Perushim, because the Perushim, they're honest. They're good. They're not going to take revenge on you because of me. And you don't have to worry about the Tzedukim, because the Tzedukim are my buddies. But you do have to worry about are the hypocrites. The hypocrites that dress like the Perushim, but are really the Tzedukim. And he brings the famous statement. The famous saying is that they do Maisa Zimri, and they want Schar of Pinchas. Maisa Zimri is, there was a... In the Torah brings down, Zimri was one of the Shvatim, one of the Nasiim. He was the Nasi of Shevet of the tribe of Shimon, and he did an immoral act with one of the daughters of the Midianite king. Okay, with Cusbi, that's her name, and Pinchas, you know, came at the time, and he killed both of them. And at that time, there was a plague going around the Jews, and when Pinchas killed them both, it stopped the plague. And Pinchas, as a result of that act, he became a Kohen as well. Even though his father was made into a Kohen, but he was already born after Aaron was made into a Kohen. So he himself wasn't, you know, he was already born, but Hashem said, now that you did this, you're going to be from the Kohanic line as well. And most of the Kohanim, towards the middle or the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, it switched actually from David HaMelech, he switched it to Tzadok, who was from the line of Pinchas. So, but the saying went is, they do the worst immoral act and they want the reward for the most righteous people. Those are the people you have to be away from. So, Shalamis takes over, and now we keep in mind, oh, just by the way, just as a trivia, there were only 3 women kings or leaders in Israel from the earliest time, from Yeshua ben Nun until the present. Oh yeah, I didn't think you'd get that one. Okay, that was it. So you had three Jewish women. One was Ataliah in the first Beis HaMikdash. She actually killed out the whole. She was married to the king of Yehuda at the time, and killed out everybody. But when her husband was killed. While he was in up north, so she killed out everybody else, and she became queen. Except, you know, so they hid one of the it was a baby, and they took the baby away from the house of David, and when the child grew older, he became the king as well. The second one was Shalamis, and the third is to our present day was Golda Meir. Those are 3 leaders, only women leaders. All right, the trivia. So, but it says, so Shalamis became the king. Now, just keep in mind also, Shalamis was the sister of Shimon ben Shattach. Now, we know Shimon ben Shattach was, he was one, we call one of the Zugos, one of the pairs. There were two, if you read Pirkei Avos, so it says, Moshe kibul Torah miSinai and gave it to Yeshua, to the Zakenim, to the Anshei Knesset Dola. Shimon HaTzadik was the last of them, and then his Talmud was Antigonus Ishtoko. And then we start with the Zugos, the pairs. One was Yosef ben Yoezer and Yosef ben Yochanan, and then came Shimon ben Shetach and Yehuda ben Tabai. So Shimon ben Shetach was the Nasi of the Jewish people in terms of the Sanhedrin. So he was the real leader. And in the beginning of Yanai's reign, Yanai married Shimon ben Shetach's sister. So Yanai was good at the beginning, and there was a good relations between him and the Perushim, and then things cooled down, and then he went off, and now Shulamis is going to be the queen, And Shulamis is going to be under, she's ruling the country, and she's turning over the kingdom, the rulingship, the government is now going to be in effect ruled by Shimon ben Shattach, who is her brother, which is for the 9 years that she's queen, until she dies, this is going to be the one and only peaceful, everything is working right. Everything is working right now in the government. There's no battles between brothers or within. There's no wars, at least no war. There's no outside forces attacking Judea. Even within Judea, Judea is not really attacking any country that's not necessary. There was a war or two that Shalom Tzion. She had to make a war here or there, but basically she cut back on all the wars. Yanai HaMelech was into building his empire, so every country would attack and attack and attack. He'd win a few, lose a few, and then win again, but Shulamis didn't do any of that, and she had the respect of all the Perushim. Over here there's a Vayikra Rabbah, there's a Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah. And the Medrash says as follows, if you just read it, it says, Davar acher v'nasati gishmeichem bi'itam. And this is referring to the pasuk that before the tochacha, before the curses, it says, when you are doing well, Hashem, the rain will fall in its time, b'leilei Shabbosos, it's going to fall on leilei Shabbos. Maisi v'mei Shimon ben Shattach v'mei Shlamtza Hamalka. This is the only time it has her name spelled like this. I guess as the Medrash had Shahayu Gishamim Yardim Balele Shabbosos, as the rain came. I'm sorry. It says the rain fell in its time on the nights of Friday nights, and it happened in the days of Shimon ben Shattach, who was the leader of the Ephraim people, and his sister, the name of Queen Shlom Tzion, that the rain fell on Friday nights. Until the wheat achinasu chitim keklayos were made like kidney beans, and the barley was like olives, and the adashim were like a dinner of zav. That's how fat, that's how rich the food, the produce was during that time. Ubatsru mehem chachamim, the chachamim gathered some of them and they left them for future generations to show the power of sin. That what sin causes. In other words, when everything is going right and people are learning Torah and there's Torah and mitzvahs and no aveiros, so the land produces and the land produces very well. That's the way things work in Eretz Yisrael. As you can see even today, things don't work on any logical derech hateva natural way. And like everything, it's lamalami derech hateva. So. So Shalom Tzion, Salome Alexandra was her English name. So she rules for 9 years. She makes peace with the Pharisees. She was part of them. One of the things she does is that when they kill these 80 or 85, when Yanai and the Tzedukim killed the Perushim for rebelling, so she ended up bringing to trial and she killed those Sadukim that were involved in this terrible thing. I guess that was like a sore spot to the people. Other than that, probably on the advice of Shimon Shattach, they did not do a witch hunt. They didn't go after all the Sadukim and even all the scores that there was. With the exception of that incident, which was a terrible, terrible incident that Yanai was in charge of. So that they took retribution for all those that were involved. But after that, they didn't go after the Tzedukim. I guess overall for the best of the country and everything, you don't want to. You know, today we're on top, so we'll beat you. Tomorrow you get on top and you beat us. So the Chachamim, in their infinite wisdom, decided this is the proper course. And they didn't go ahead and go after all the Tzedukim, at least in a physical way. What they did instead is that they went, we'll see, in a ruchnius way. They strengthened the country so strong, which we'll get to in a second. But what Shalamis has two sons, and these two sons are going to destroy the country. They are going to set everything down, set the course in such a way that it's going to inevitably is going to lead to the destruction of the second base of Mikdash. And her two sons was Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. Hyrcanus was older, Aristobulus was younger. Hyrcanus was like a nicer guy. He was like a weaker personality type of a person. Aristobulus was very headstrong, like some of the other Hashmonaim, like Yanai, like Yochanan, Hyrcanus. So he was, and Shalamis, the mother, really understood them both. She gave the Kahuna Gedola to Hyrcanus, and Aristobulus really got nothing. Okay, and the mother realized, look, you know, it's better that this kid stays out of everything because he's going to cause problems, which eventually he will. Okay, that's Rehov Shalom Tzion. If you know, there's in Yerushalayim, that was the picture. Okay, so what she does is but during this is a great time for Klal Yisrael, and they start rebuilding infrastructure, and they start rebuilding the yeshivas. And if you go to the next slide, so this is a Gemara in Baba Basra, and the Gemara in Baba Basra writes, there was a person by the name of Ben Gamla. You probably here in South Florida were familiar with the term, because there's a bunch of the schools are called Ben Gamla, and it's after the Ben Gamla. And the Gemara brings down that we mention this person Yeshua Ben Gamla for good, because if not for him, the Torah would have been forgotten among the Jews. That in the beginning, if somebody had a father, his father taught him Torah, and somebody who didn't have a father, he wouldn't learn Torah. So what did Ben Gamla, what was his decision? What did he learn? He made a drasha. He learned out something from the pasuk, and it says "Limadatem osam." Literally, it means you should teach them, and he learned it "Limadatem itam." You should learn with them, you know, with other people that don't have. So he decided to. They used to set up like a little chedarim, little yeshivas, yeshivas for little children in Yerushalayim. And why? They said kimitzion teitzei Torah. But still, somebody who had a father used to bring him to yeshiva. So then they were misaking. The next level was, okay, so they had yeshiva set up, but you got to get the kids to the yeshiva. So then they decided to set yeshivas up in every city. The whole Pelach u'Pelach. Every city had a yeshiva, and they would send them there when they were 16 years old to start learning in yeshiva. So once again, what would happen is if the Rebbe would got upset with them, what would a 16-year-old do if his Rebbe got upset with him? He'd leave. He'd go. That's it. I don't need to be here. So what they did is, and Rebbe Yeshua Ben Gamla came up, and he was misaking. He set up that they would set up yeshivas in all towns, and they would bring them in there from the ages of 6 to 7. And the Gemara in Baba Basra continues, and how much is the maximum that one Rebbe could have, and it brings down that he has 25 up until, and if he's, he has any more than that, he needs an assistant till about 40. After 40, you have to break the class up again into the two Rebbeim. And that's what the Gemara and Baba Basra is going to be dealing with. But this is about the time when Ben Gamla comes in, and this is the time they start to institute yeshivas for all kids. Probably up until this time, you know, they talk about the years of many wars, and if fathers weren't around or they were killed, then there was nobody there to teach the children. We are talking now about about 60 before the Common Era? 60 before the Common Era, okay. 67, okay. So what happens is Aristobulus feels a little left out, and rightly so. So what does Aristobulus do? Again, Aristobulus is he's the son that got nothing. He's not the governor, he's not in the government because his mom is running the government, and he's not the Kohen Gadol because his older brother got that. So the Sadducim, the Sadducees, they find an ally in Aristobulus. and they befriend him, and they say, "Listen, you know, you're out of the loop, and so are we, and maybe together we can come to something." And what happens is towards the end of his mother's life, he goes ahead and he like really badges his mother. Oh, just to mention that Shimon ben Shattach had died before his sister. So towards the last few years of her life, she didn't have her brother who could give her the wise counsel, and she was old and she didn't have the strength to fight off or to take on challenges that were around her. And Aristobulus capitalized on this, and Aristobulus came and petitioned his mother. He says, "Look, it's not fair. Hyrcanus is the congadol and I'm nothing, and you have to give me something." And she says, "No, I'm not giving you anything." And he said to her, "Well, if you don't give me something, I'm going to Aridus. I don't know how to say the names, but the king of Arabia and the king of the Arabs, and I'm going to form an alliance with him." I guess it was a real enough threat that he said, "Okay." There were 25 fortresses built around Eretz Yisrael at the time, around Judea at the time, and he said to Aristobulus, "I'll give you 22 of them. The other three were where they kept the national treasures." So that she didn't turn over to Aristobulus, but she turned over to Aristobulus the other 22. Well, you can just see the problems that are going to come with this. So she gives to Aristobulus these 22, and he quickly goes ahead and fills it up with gets his tzedukim cronies to go ahead and man them or set them there. Now I did read somewhere that a lot of these fortresses already the tzedukim were there, because since they were at this point in time they were like persona non grata, they were out. This was they were what's the right word, not the main, but they were like already the left out of Klal Yisrael, left out of the Jewish people. So a lot of them, that's where they lived, in the fortresses or nearby, because they were the secondary, they were left out of the Jewish people. So he now has control. He was turned over to all 22 of them, and then she dies. When Queen Shalom Tzion dies, what does Aristobulus do? Aristobulus quickly. Oh, so she left in her will when she died that Hyrcanus becomes the king as well. So Hyrcanus becomes Kohen Gadol, and Hyrcanus becomes the leader of the Jewish people. She knew that for the Jewish, for the Frumpi, for the Perushim, Hyrcanus would be a better choice than Aristobulus. Aristobulus, as soon as his mother dies, Aristobulus goes ahead and grabs the other three fortresses. So now he's got all the fortresses, plus he's got a lot of money. And what does he do with the money? He hires himself a mercenary army. So now he's got fortresses, money, and an army. And he goes ahead and he starts to attack Hyrcanus. And that's a picture of a coin with Aristobulus. And the next one. Okay, before we go even, just before further, I just want to give you an idea, because by the end when we see what happened, this is what Judea looked like in the time of Queen Shalom Tzion, Queen Shalamis. This is kingdom is 63 before the Common Era. And you could see it goes all the way up, how far up it goes into what would be today Syria. It goes past Beersheba, not that much past Beersheba. They never really had the south. But what is important, if you notice on the bottom, is Idumea and Nabatea. These are two warlike tribes that were in the south. The Idumeans, they did conquer. Of the Idumeans, we're going to see they're going to play a very, very big role here, because the governor of the Idumeans is a person by the name of, either Antipater or Antipater, I don't know how to say the name, Antipater, who's going to be the advisor to Hyrcanus. But I'm getting ahead of the story. But just take a look. This is what it looked like when Shalamis died. And things are going to take a radical change now. Okay. Now, Alexandra dies. Hyrcanus is the rightful heir. But after 3 months, without, you know, not having what Aristobulus has, he basically surrenders to his brother Aristobulus. And Aristobulus arrives with the army, and he takes over pretty much everything. And Aristobulus and Hyrcanus, somehow Aristobulus allows him to be Kohen Gadol. I guess he's happy enough, at least at the time, Aristobulus is happy enough to have control of the country. And at this time also, Aristobulus' son, Alexander, marries Hyrcanus' daughter, Alexandra. And that's it. And so far at this point, had everything just stopped here and remained like this, the Jewish people of the Judea would have been well off. Everything would have been fine. There would have been everything that the Chachamim wanted. The Chachamim would have had a separation of the Kohen Gadol to, there would be one brother. The owner, the government would be by another brother. Of course, they would have wanted somebody from Judea, but okay. But at least they would have separated the religious, the separation of church and state. Right? That's basically, say it like that. So that would have been and everything could have been, had this just remained the way it was, it would have been that. We would have been okay. But, there's always that but. Okay, I just want to I have over here just to see where, this is the family tree. So, you see the five sons, all, I think the other four did not have any children. Shimon had three children. Two of them were killed by, he had a daughter also who was married to.
Sure, leave the women off.
Well, I just realized it now. But in any case, Shimon's son-in-law killed out everybody except for Yochanan Hyrcanus. And Yochanan Hyrcanus had three sons. Aristobulus was he took over the government, and his best, he was very friendly with Antigonus. And there was another son or two also, not only the women, but now, basically, what happened is Antigonus, he was killed because he came into the palace with his sword on, and he was told to come in quickly with the sword on, because people were jealous of Antigonus, and it was a plot that he should be killed. Aristobulus was not happy with it. He was grieved a lot, died shortly afterwards. I'm not sure if he was poisoned or whatever, and then that left it for Alexander Janius. King Yanai, he was the king. Yanai had, and this is it, Yanai had the two sons, this is what we're up to. He had Aristobulus and Hyrcanus. And as you see over here, Yochanan Alexander married Salome Alexandra, probably named after his, I guess it was Sparta. So named after the living grandmother, but okay. That's a... so they were married. So everything at this point, everything would have been great. You would have had two brothers. Hyrcanus would have been the Kohen Gadol. Aristobulus would have been the king, and that would have been fine. Except now we're going to see what's going to happen. Okay, Aristobulus is going to have two more sons. We're going to see how they play in soon. Okay. So now, what happens? Okay, just to bring it back to a Pirkei Avos for a second. During this time of the two brothers, the two Zugos, the next two leaders of the Jewish people, was Shmaya the Avtalion. Now, Shmaya the Avtalion, in fact, were both Gerim. They were both non-Jews, and they became the greatest two people of the Jewish people at the time. And just if you take a look at what they said in Pirkei Avos, their quips, what they're known for, Shmaya v'Avtalion kibla mehem, Shmaya v'Avtalion accepted, they learned from Shimon ben Shetach and Yudah ben Tabai. Shmaya says, Avis amlacha, you should love to do work, usnas rabbanis, and you should hate the rabbinate, or they hate the different pshatim, but they hate the honor of, you know, that comes with the the rabbinate, the altis vada l'rishus, and don't give up, don't get intimate with the rishus, with the government. So already you see that he's don't be intimate with the government. The government is not always, especially when you have a government of Yanai and Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. And then Avtalion even says it more. It says, Avtalion Omer Chachamim, Heziru B'Devreichem, Rabbis, the Chacham, you should be careful with your words. Shema Techuvu Chovas Golius, because maybe you'll say something and you're going to be thrown out by the government. The government's going to want to kill you. Havitiglu L'makom Mayim Arayim, and you'll have to run to a place where there's bad waters. There's heresy, mistakes that could happen. V'yishtu ha-talmidim abam achreichem, and the talmidim, the students that would come after you, will drink from those bad waters. V'nimsu shem shemayim eschalal, and you'll find that the name of Hashem will be profaned. Shimon ben Shatach had to run away, and so did Yudah ben Tabai, because of Yanai HaMelech. We're going to see during the time of the two brothers, Choni HaMagol, they're going to try to get to curse one, curse the other. During the next generation, when Herod takes over, he kills out all the Chachamim. Most of the Chachamim have to go into hiding. So it's just the quip of the time. The Chachamim, be careful what you say. Don't say things against the government that'll cause them to want to get rid of you. You'll have to go into hiding, and then other problems will come from that. Okay, the next. Now, this is a very, very revealing, very telling Gemara in Yuma. And the Gemara reads as follows: Tana Rabbanan, Maisa b'Kohen Gadol Echad. It was a Maisa with one Kohen Gadol. Knowing from the time, it probably was Hyrcanus. Could have been somebody else, but most likely it was Hyrcanus. Shiyatza mi Beis HaMikdash. He was going out of the Beis HaMikdash. V'havi Azle Kuli Alma Basre, and he was being escorted by all the people. All the people were following the Kohen Gadol. I looked again the Gemara here. I don't know if it was on Yom Kippur or not. If it's on Yom Kippur, it's even a bigger something, even more wondrous, this Gemara. But even if not, so the Kohen Gadol, the honor was being accorded to him, that he was being followed by all the Jewish people. Kevin de Chazinu L'Shmaya V'Yavtalion. So here they are, they're walking the Kohen Gadol, and who do they run into? They see on the other side, they see Shmaya V'Yavtalion, the two leaders of the Sanhedrin, the two religious leaders. And what do? Shafku L'Didei. So they leave the Kohen Gadol. The Azli Basa Shmaya V'Yavtalion, and they start to follow Shmaya V'Yavtalion. Just picture the scene. They leave the Kohen Gadol and they start to follow the Rashi Yeshivas. The Sof Asu Shmaya V'Yavtalion V'Yavturi Minei the Kohen Gadol. So I guess at some point, they were meeting and they started going along the same way together, and then all of a sudden it came time to part. So the Shmaya V'Yavtalion was leaving the Kohen Gadol. So the Kohen Gadol says, so Amar Lahen, the Kohen Gadol says to them, Yesen b'nei amimin l'shalem. He's trying to give them like a little rib. They're saying, yes, the people of other nations should go in peace. In other words, you're not Jewish, you're Gerim, you're non-Jews. Who became converts, and go in peace. So I guess they weren't going to take this quip sitting down, and they responded. Amrule, they said back to him, Yesen b'nei amimin l'shalom, let the people of other nations go in peace, the avdin uvda de Aaron, because they are going in the paths of Aaron HaKohen. What do we know? What do we say about Aaron? Aaron, right? It says heavy. You should love peace and chase after peace. You should love the people, love people. And bring them close to Torah. That's what the Medrash says about Aaron HaKohen. So they said back to the Kohen Gadol, most likely Hyrcanus at the time, they said back, let the people of other nations go in peace because they're doing what Aaron HaKohen was doing. They pursue peace, they love peace, they bring people close to the Torah. V'lo yese bar Aaron l'shalem, and that let not the son of Aaron go in peace, d'lo avid uvdid d'Aaron, because he, the Kohen Gadol, is not acting like Aaron HaKohen. And that was the response back to the Kohen Gadol. I think that's the Gemara. It's a Gemara in Yuma. It's a Gemara in Daf Ayin Aleph in Yuma. I think it's you could pick out a lot from here, this society. First of all, you see where the loyalties of the common people were. Common people, the loyalties was the Torah, was the Rosh Yeshivas. You see that if it is Hyrcanus, you see that the Rosh Yeshivas were not afraid to say something to a Kohen Gadol. That, you know, you also see the chutzpah of a Kohen Gadol talking to the Rosh Yeshivas, the leaders of the generation. But something you see how how everything what the relationship was and how they felt about the Kohen Gadol and how the Kohen Gadol felt about the Chachamim. I mean, just picture this. This is the Kohen Gadol. This is the one who goes into the Kodesh Kodashim on Yom Kippur. It's mind-boggling, you know. And here he is. This is the way he refers to the Shmai V'Avtalion. Shmai V'Avtalion are the Rebbeim of Hillel. The next generation is Hillel and Shammai. And it's Hillel V'Shammai Kibbul Mehem from these two. And this is how the Kohen Gadol talks about them. All right, that's just them. Okay, so now we come to a person by the name of Antipater. Antipater was a governor from the south. Now, could we go back to that green, the one with the green? Go back. One more. Keep going back. Back. Okay. Idumea is down here. Okay. This is where Antipater was the governor. Originally, he was the governor of down here of Idumea. Idumea was a warlike tribe, and they were conquered by Yanai HaMelech. One of the tenets of Yanai HaMelech's foreign policy was that if he conquered you and you're not Jewish, you have to become Jewish. So he would either force, and there were certain times where he would take a city, he'd forcibly convert them, and if you don't want to forcibly convert them, he would kill you. This was Yanai HaMelech. And this is what Yanai did. To the Idumeans as well. So he had converted the tribe, were converted Jews, so they had a din of slaves. They had a din of like Eved Avade Kananim, you know, because they were slaves. I guess he'd convert them to be an Eved Kanani. And Eved Kanani has the same laws. An Eved Kanani means a non-Jewish slave that you acquire, that you attack, and you get in your possession, and they're yours forever, and they have the same laws as a woman. So they were somewhat Jewish. If you free them, once you free those slaves, they become full Jews. So Antipater was one of these converted Jews, and he became the advisor to Hyrcanus. And you can just go back. Now he's going to be the cause.
Where's Petra?
Oh, Petra is, we're going to get to it. Petra is over here in Nabatea. So we're going to see. Basically, what's going to happen is Hyrcanus is out on everything, and Antipater goes to Hyrcanus and he tells Hyrcanus, "Listen, you're better than that. You deserve everything. You deserve your mother told you she left the kingdom to you, and you're going to let Aristobulus get the government. Come on, we'll help you." So he goes back. He takes Hyrcanus down to Idumea. And they make a treaty with Idumea, with Nabatea, and with Aretes, the king of the Arabs. And they come with a sizable force of an army. Now, the Judea is not expecting a fight. I guess they did this secretly enough. You can go. Let's go back to the. Go back. Stop. Go back one. Okay. So they weren't expecting a fight. You know, all of a sudden you come up with an army with all these people. So he started to take different cities. They started to take different cities and like sort of capture city after city after city. You know, Aristobulus is in Yerushalayim. There's no, you know, there's no reason to suspect any type of a war or anything. And the next thing he knows is that Hyrcanus is the head of Hyrcanus, the Kohen Gadol, nonetheless, is the head of an army. You know, okay, they're, you know, the Idumeans. The Idumeans are allies there, and Nabataeans not so much. And I guess Aretaeus just hid himself or whatever. Maybe didn't show to this. But they come to Yerushalayim. And now he's comes into Yerushalayim, and what do? In Yerushalayim, they see Hyrcanus, the Kohen Gadol, and they open the gates. And what does Hyrcanus do? He comes in with the army. Now Aristobulus, who's the king, who has his army, realizes, they're in trouble. So what they end up doing is they end up going behind the walls of the of the Temple Mount. The way it was is that the Temple Mount had its own series of walls. So the Temple Mount was besieged, so it was Aristobulus in the Temple Mount with his army, surrounded by Hyrcanus and his army. And this is what's happening in Yerushalayim. There's a siege between Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. And if you go ahead, and there's another Gemara that actually speaks about this. This is a Gemara in Sota, Daf Mem Tes. And the Gemara says, the Gemara is talking about teaching children the Greek philosophy, or Greek chachma, Greek wisdom. And it comes out not to. And it brings down this story. It says, Tana Rabbanan, when the Malchei Beis Chashmonai, when the kings of the Chashmonaim were fighting, where they were besieging one another, it says Hyrcanus was on the outside, and Aristobulus was inside. And every day, what happened is they would bring over a basket of dinarim, of money, and they would put it over the wall, and they would, they didn't have korbanos, right? There's only so many animals that you had on the inside. So they used to bring a basket, they used to lower the basket filled with money, and the Jews on the outside would take a sheep, a lamb, whatever, and put it in the basket, and they would raise it back over the wall, and that's what they would bring as the korban. Right, especially the carbon tamid that has to be brought twice a day, in the morning and the afternoon. So I guess they were doing this twice a day, getting the carbonos. You know, they don't have carbonos. They bring over money. They put the carbon in and they bring it back up. So Haya Sham Zakein Echad. There was this old man, an elder man, Shahaya, that he was familiar with Chachmas Yavamis, with Greek wisdom. He was Hellenized. So he said to them, as long as you keep as long as they keep working in the Beis HaMikdash, they're not going to be given over to your hand. You know, it's like, what are you doing? You're shooting yourself in the foot. You know, you keep giving them animals for korbanos, and they're going to have Hashem's help and God's help, and they're going to be able to withstand you. So what did they do the next day? The next day they sent that lamachar, they sent down the basket of money like they always did. And instead of sending up a sheep, a lamb, they sent up halu lehem chazir. They sent up a pig. And it says when it got up to half the wall, half the way up, notzi parnav, it put its hooves into the wall, and Mizdazda Eretz Yisrael Abra Meos Parsa, and the land of Israel shook 400 Parsa. I guess it's symbolic for something. At that time, they said, cursed be the man that raises pigs, and curses the man that teaches his children Chachmas Yavanis, Greek wisdom. And at that time they learned, and it also just says, this is just so telling, is that year when they needed to bring the Omer, I'm just finishing up the Gemara, now the Omer is a carbon that was brought on Pesach, and the Omer they had to bring the Omer that year from as far as Gagos Srifim, and they had to bring that was on Pesach and on Shavuos, they had to get the Shtei Lechem from Bikas Ein Soker. Both of those places were very far from Yerushalayim, and I guess to point out, because of the war, the siege, they couldn't get the food. There was no food anywhere near Yerushalayim, and they had to go far away to get the special food for Yerushalayim. But this is a Gemara, again, another telling Gemara, how the brothers were fighting with each other. This is what's going on with the war going on. So then, you know, they needed carbono. So what do? They, like the Jews themselves, they wouldn't even think of, you know, of course you got to bring a carbon to Hashem. You lower the thing, you give them a carbon. Well, but somebody with Greek thought and Greek philosophy, that's what he does. I think I saw a pshat that what does it mean that what's the symbolic of Chazir? That's symbolic of Edom. Esav was symbolic. He's known as a Chazir. What is a pig? What is the pig different than any other animal in the world?
Looks kosher on the outside, but not on the
inside. That's
right.
It has split hooves all the way up. It has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud. So when you look at it, the pig goes ahead and says, look, you see, I'm kosher. I'm a good guy. I'm kosher. But inside, he's rotten. That's the siman of Esav. Outside, the civil, you know, the most civilized country in the world was the leading in arts and music and everything was with the German people. Outside, they show civility, they show, you know, but inside, they don't have it. Their inside is not the same. So, and that was the symbolic of Chazirim. This dispute is going to be solved by none other than Pompey. Pompey is going to come in, and he's the one that's going to decide how to finish this dispute. Let's just go on one more. Okay, so what happened is the two brothers were at an impasse, and they're going to decide how do we solve this. So at that point, at that time in history, Pompey is making his run around the east of the Mediterranean, and he's a very successful campaign of Pompey. We'll get into this next time. At the same time, just in historical references, is Caesar, Julius Caesar, is having as stunning as Pompey was. So Julius Caesar's achievements and accomplishments in Gaul and France and then in Europe, in the West, was even more than Pompey. So these two things are happening at the same time. So Pompey sets up a proconsul in Damascus, and the two brothers decide. This is before Pompey comes to Eretz Yisrael. They decide, let's go to the proconsul in Rome and whatever they decide. Now, I guess Aristobulus knew better than Hyrcanus how to play the game, but we're going to see Hyrcanus is going to learn how to play the game very, very nicely soon. But Aristobulus gives a bigger bribe to the proconsul, and the proconsul says, you know what? I think Aristobulus is the right one, and therefore he says to Hyrcanus, you better get your armies out of there. And that's what Hyrcanus does. Hyrcanus lifts the siege off Yerushalayim. The Nabataeans, the Idumeans, and King the Arabs, they all go home. And I don't know if they go home, but they at least lift the siege off Yerushalayim. And now, let's just go on. So for a few months, this is what it is. There's still like small civil war. And now comes Pompey. Pompey is on, there were a lot of things happening at the time in the Roman world. And Pompey righted a lot of wrongs that were going on. And he was the right man at the right time for the Roman people. There were rebellions that he put down, and there were pirates that he had to deal with, that the Roman Empire had to deal with. And he was a very successful general, and he also he was, I don't know if the first, but he was definitely known that his army was loyal to Pompey. Pompey took care of his army, and his army took care of Pompey, and they were very loyal. And you can see how it's going to develop as a result of that. But Pompey finally at this point comes into Judea, and Okay, this is just a when you know you plug in a database. So you plug in the words Chashmenayim, and it's very interesting. This is a medrash, a Sechel Tov medrash, and it brings down that you find by the Malchei Yehuda and the Malchei Yisrael and the Malchei Beis Chashmenayim that when Hashem finally gets upset with he gets too angry. So he'll bring on them Edom, and that will lead to the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, and they'll be sent into exile under Edom and Yishmael and other Gaim. Okay, that was just the medrash that I saw there. Anyway, this is just a few of the accomplishments. I just want to end with the next slide. I just want to show you that we're going to discuss next time what exactly Pompeii did and what were the ramifications, how Judea fit into the scheme of everything going on. We're going to have the makings for a great movie with Mark Anthony and Cleopatra and Julius Caesar and Pompeii and triumvirates and Shakespearean plays. This is all coming up now. But I just want to just go to the next slide. We'll end with keep one more. Okay. I just want to show you this is what Pompeii did. So after a few months, Pompeii comes to Judea. Hyrcanus and Aristobulus come, and they both plead their reasons for Pompeii. Now, Pompeii's interest is not in the two brothers, and he doesn't care about Judea. And Pompeii, maybe understandably so, is interested in, he's motivated by what's best for Rome. Now, each one set their things. So, Hyrcanus says I should be the Kohen Gadol because my mom declared that she, in her will, left it to me. Aristobulus, who was on the side of the Sadducim, listen to what his argument was, says, no, I should be because the Perushim, the religious, they want a separation of church and state. And therefore, since Hyrcanus is Kohen Gadol, so me, the other brother, should be the king. That's like, you know, that was... Even though he's using the line of the Perushim against the Perushim. In any case, what really was what personalities? Two things. First of all, Hyrcanus was a much weaker personality than Aristobulus, and he realized that he'd be better off dealing with a weaker leader, weaker king than a stronger one. And secondly, is Hyrcanus had with him the advisor of Antipater, however you say his name, and he is going to be a very something that, you know, it's hard to control Jews, but if you have a non-Jew there who's sort of in charge, it's easier to deal with him on that side. So Pompeii is going to end up siding with Hyrcanus, and the story's not over. We're going to continue what happens between Aristobulus, the two or three revolts that are going to happen now. But I just want to show you what he did to Eretz Yisrael, what he did to Judea. He knocked Judea in. He broke it down into five parts. The five parts, you had Judea, which was, that was the Jewish part. Then you had the Shomronim, the Shomron part, which is in the yellow. Oh, by the way, you see the entire white coast took all that away from Judea. Most of them were Greek cities anyway, and he just let them go back to their Greek cities. He took away the yellow, which is Shomron, and they gave that to one type of a person. Took away what was the Transjordan, the Decapolis, and gave that to some other. Again, took it away from Judea. The Golan Heights was also taken away and given to somebody else. He kept them with the Galilee. The Galilee was still run by Jews, but that was a different section. So he ended up with five different sections, as you can see over here. And that's how he took an empire, which about 10 years ago, we saw what it looked like in the green, all the way up and down, all controlled under one army, under Shalamis. And he was a very, very strong hold. It was a very powerful nation with, like this, overnight, it was divided into five sections. So I guess next time we come, before we could appreciate what's going to happen with Pompeii and how it's going, to, Judea is going to be ruled by as a as a Roman colony, or I'd like to get just an idea, just like an overview of Rome, how Rome got to where it got to, and we're going to have to know where Pompey is, what his standing is, and what he hoped to gain. And quickly, within the next 10 years, not even, there's going to be a lot of changes in Europe, and in Rome, with Pompey and Julius Caesar and Mark Antony and Octavian, and this is going to be a lot of things happening. And this is all, a lot of things are going to be happening with Judea. It's going to be playing a minor, sometimes even a major part in this more global conflict that's going to happen in the Roman Empire. So I think we're going to just end over here. All right. Have a good evening.